Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg.
And for this portion of WGTD's morning show, I'm really excited to be speaking with Rachel Strello, who is head of adult services at the Lake Geneva Public Library. And if you've never been there, you really need to visit. It's a wonderful library and beautifully situated with Lake Geneva, Geneva Lake, right in the background. And they have a robust schedule of various programs, although not so much, of course, during the last 14 or 15 months of the pandemic. Fortunately, life is returning slowly but surely back to normal. We're going to be talking about the Lake Geneva Public Library and how it has tried to carry on during the pandemic. And then we're going to move our attention to a really special event that is coming up on July 8th, 9th, and 10th, which is the Beachside Author Fest, which is an opportunity to meet all kinds of local authors and to see the books that they have written. And Chris Brooks, who is a member of the Friends of the Lake Geneva Library, is also the coordinator of this big event, which is actually expanding this year in a time when so many things are either canceled or contracted or restricted somehow. This event is getting bigger, which is so exciting. So we'll be talking about all that and more. So Rachel Strello and Chris Brooks, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Rachel, could we begin with you and get kind of an overview on how life changed for you and your staff and your patrons, for that matter, at the Lake Geneva Public Library with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic? How did you folks carry on in the wake of the massive shutdown of just about everything in the spring of 2020?
Yeah. It was, I think, a struggle for everyone, but I think we handled it pretty well. Right away, we decided that we were going to continue our service by doing curbside, which is something that, you know, libraries don't think really thought of until COVID happened. So people were able to call into the library and pick up their materials on the outside of the library on a cart. So we were able to keep people, you know, supplied in books and movies and all of that. And as it progressed, we let people in for appointments with their masks, and we had all the, you know, the PPE that we needed, including plexiglass and all of those masks for the staff. And we really tried to be open as much as we could and have as much access as we could. And we did continue our programming to reach out to everyone that you know couldn't come in, obviously, to the library. So we did a lot of Zoom programming, and we're able to reach out to audiences even outside of Lake Geneva and outside of Wisconsin. So it was really a unique experience for us all. And of course, we're really happy to be back open right now, full bore. So it's exciting.
I was going to say, it's kind of ironic that in some ways, life shut down and constricted drastically. I mean, for most of us, we were largely limited to our own homes and just a few necessary places, necessary destinations. And yet there are other ways in which life expanded. And for instance, for the Lake Geneva Public Library, you're talking about the possibility of actually reaching all kinds of people who normally you would not even thought about reaching with some of your programming. And just give us a sense of the scope of the programming that is offered, a pandemic or not, by the Lake Geneva Public Library. What kinds of programs are we talking about?
So we, Lake Geneva really loves its history. history. So we have a lot of programs that we do with Black Point Estate and Gardens, and Chris is part of that. So we had her a couple times, as well as Michael Rayberg and Dave Desmond. And we reached out to, we had Cal Cothrade come in. He was zoom in, and he was for shipwrecks, so that brought us a unique aspect of having people from Canada zoom in with us. We had a Spooktober this last year, and we'll be doing it again this year, where every week in October was full of a spooky program. So we had Chad Lewis come in. He's a very popular Wisconsin author and cryptoid detector. Dustin Parry was here at the library, and he's actually based out of, I believe, Rhode Island. So with those two, we got people out of the country. It was a mixture of programming. We had Lake Geneva, the ghost tours, come and do a program with, through Zoom. So it was really fun to get those kind of programs into people's houses. And we continued our book clubs, so that was fun too, and bringing in some authors. So it's a wide range of programs, and we just like bringing stuff, new stuff, to people as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's certainly been a time of innovation and improvisation to some extent, which is important. So when did the Lake Geneva Public Library actually open its doors once again? I mean, I think in something you said, you implied at least that you are now open pretty much and operating normally. When did that occur, and what kind of a occasion was that for you and your colleagues?
Oh, we were very excited. I mean, we had been open pretty much, I think we had only closed for maybe a month or so during COVID, and we were gradually, getting more and more people in. But we did away with, the limiting of people. I believe it was May of this year, maybe it was a little earlier. I can't recall at the moment, I apologize. But it was open, masks were required at the beginning, but of course now we go by CDC guidelines. So we don't limit, and we're happy to see people, and people were happy to see us. I think that was the biggest takeaway we had from this.
Before we begin talking about this special event coming up, Chris Brooks, maybe you could say a word about the function of the Friends of the Lake Geneva Library, of which you are a member. Tell us a bit about this organization and its mission.
The Friends of the Library actually was formed back in 1977 to support the library mission. So we volunteer time. We volunteer to raise money, and we work on special projects such as Author Fest or our annual book sales, which have changed because of COVID. But it's an organization that's been around a long time to support the library in whatever they choose to do.
And it sounds like as coordinator of Beachside Author Fest, you are an especially busy friend of the library. Give us a little history of how long this event has been around.
We are coming into our seventh year. We had 5 years along the beachside sidewalk on the south side of the library. And then when COVID struck, we didn't want to lose our authors and the continuity of our programming. So we had virtual Author Fest last year, and we invited the authors to submit biographies and information about their books and a photograph. And we set up a special website people could access through the library website. And the authors were available to sell their books online. They seem to be very happy to be coming back live and enjoying the sights and sounds of the beachside this year. So we have many, many returning authors.
Great. But it sounds like you did what you needed to do. And it sounds like, at least to some extent, last year's revised festival was successful. And I'm sure, if nothing else, just better than nothing when so many other things winked completely out of existence. It was great that you were able to still do this. So give our listeners, those who have not ever experienced this before, exactly what happens at the Beachside Author Fest, and in particular, how this event is actually expanding this year.
Yes, we thought we'd come back with a bang. And we weren't able to have our friends' annual meeting this year. So the discussion started out with Saturday is the Author Fest, but maybe we could somehow tie into the annual meeting as well. So that worked. And then Rachel had a speaker she was very interested in having to the library, which wouldn't happen during COVID. So we normally have a program at the annual meeting, and we thought maybe we could tie her into annual meeting plus program. And then I discovered that several of the staff and teachers at the Lake Geneva Middle School and Badger High School were working on some things that were compatible with programs at the library. So I began working with Rob Oker, the guidance counselor at the middle school, and Eric McGrath, a social studies teacher, I think he is, at the middle school, and a couple of students from Badger High School. And we put together the Friday night program, which is going to feature the school students. The programs that tie into what the library does are the Wisconsin Historical Society Journaling Project and StoryCorps and AuthorFest. So we put them all together, and we've come up with 3 days of a festival along the beachside in the Lake Geneva Library.
Fantastic. And we'll talk in a moment about the third and kind of culminating day in which all of these authors actually come together. Rachel, maybe you could say a word about this speaker that you are so excited about, who will be part of the proceedings.
So I have always been interested in very strong women throughout history. And I read the book by Pam Toller, which was Warrior Women, and I absolutely loved it. And I thought she would make a great presenter to have come in and speak to, you know, Lake Geneva and our many visitors that we have. She was scheduled for last year, but of course, because of COVID, we couldn't have her come in person. At that time, I wanted her to be in person. So I contacted her this year with the idea. I said, hey, would you be willing to do the Thursday over Zoom? And then please come back on Saturday so everyone can meet you and ask questions. You could sign books and you could, you know, take in the absolutely lovely view that we have as well. So I was very happy when she agreed to do that. So it's exciting for me.
Fantastic. Very, very good. Yeah, I love the idea of that for Thursday and what Chris just described for Friday, which is a really neat idea as well. And once we get through all of the introductory matters, then we get to Saturday. And that is, of course, when we really have these authors come together. So Chris Brooks, describe what it looks like when people sort of walk through Beachside Author Fest. Exactly what and who do they see?
Well, right now we have 35 authors committed to the day, and they come in and set up tables, sometimes little canopy tents, or whatever kind of display they would like to have in a 10 by 10 foot space. We mark out all the spaces along the sidewalk and into the park. And last year, two years ago, we expanded all the way around to the front of the building. And so every author creates their own display, and they sit at their table between 10 and 4 and offer their books for sale, chat with people, sign autographs, talk about their writing process. We have a little music in the background, and it's just a very enjoyable day to walk along and visit with all these people. Most of them are local authors. Many of them are self-published. So this is their chance to get their books out to the public in a really special way. And as I said, we have about 35 authors this year, and it's a great mix of authors who have been with us previously. So they're very excited to come back. And we've gotten several new authors from around the state and from Northern Illinois in Chicago. So I think it's going to be really exciting that we get to meet a lot of new people. And of course, last year or last time, I think we had a man who really wasn't selling too many books. They were very nonfiction, factual, kind of dense content books, and they just weren't going over all that well. So he put up a sign and started telling stories. And he just entertained people as they went by. He would tell them a short little anecdote and story, and he kept his booth going and his interests going. Lots of creative people have their chance at Beachside Author Fest.
Fantastic. And my understanding is that there's room for more. That is, if
our
authors who are listening, or friends of authors, or family members of authors who are listening, that it is not too late to become part of this. What's involved in an author becoming part of Beachside Author Fest?
There's a packet of information on the Lake Geneva Library website in the Friends section of the website. And there's an introductory letter about what it's all about, like I just mentioned. And then there's an application to fill out, mostly contact information, and a list of what's required by the authors and what's required for the organizers to provide. So we provide the space. It's a $25 fee. And then the authors bring their table, their display, their books, their canopy tent if they want. And that's about it. Just send it in with the payment, which unfortunately has to come through the U.S. mail. It's not a form you can fill out online and pay with a card, but send it into the library and we will get you signed up for a booth.
So then, is this event ultimately a fundraiser for the Friends of the Lake Geneva Public Library?
Yes. The money goes toward the Friends, which eventually goes back to the library in some form of gifts or payments for the library, because one of our purposes is to raise money for special events at the library.
Excellent. Rachel, could you just give us a little insight on what these funds typically get used for? What kind of benefit do they ultimately bring to the library and its patrons?
So the Friends support both the adult and the children. So my colleague Sarah has her funds that she does, has programs that come in well. And for myself, it brings in programming. We had Kevin Wood as President Lincoln came in. Last year we were celebrating the women's right to vote. So that brought in a person to come and speak to us as Alice Paul, which was very fun. And this year and part of last year, it provided the books for our book club, which is really helpful because sometimes, you know, we want to read a really popular book and we just can't get our hands on enough copies. So the funds really brought those so we can discuss, and even some of the authors that we discussed this year, I sent out an email and invited them to Author Fest. I'm glad some of them are coming. But they provide programming funds, and we also do take and make kits for people. That was a new thing too. So people can come into the library and create something, or take it and create it. So at home, we really appreciate everything that the Friends do for us. It's fantastic.
It's good to have generous, helpful friends, that's for sure. And it sounds like the Lake Geneva Public Library is well stocked in that respect. So if people want more information about what the Lake Geneva Public Library has to offer and more about Beachside Author Fest coming up in early July, I assume there is a website where they can find whatever they're looking for.
Yeah, so our website is just Lake Geneva. I'm going to blank on it. That's really horrible, isn't it? That's really horrible, isn't it? But if you type in the Lake Geneva Public Library, you will get us. And all of that information is on our website, as well as our Facebook page. And we have a Twitter and we have an Instagram, and we try to get all of the information out in different avenues so that people know what's going on. So that includes, thank you for this radio program. And we do put things out to the newspaper. But really the two best places that you'll find the most updated information is our website and our Facebook page.
Very good. And I know your phone number is 262-249-5299. And for folks who are coming from Racine or Kenosha over to Lake Geneva, it's just past downtown on whatever that main drag. Well, that's Highway 50, isn't it, that goes right through Lake Geneva. And right there on the lakeside is the Racine, is the Lake Geneva Public Library. And that's also where you will be able to visit Beachside Author Fest. And again, the event is spanning 3 days, July 8th, 9th, and 10th. Do I have the dates correct?
Correct.
Very good. Very good. Rachel Strello is head of adult services at the Lake Geneva Public Library. Chris Brooks is the event coordinator for this expanded Beachside Author Fest. I look forward to visiting, and I hope a lot of our listeners will take the time to visit this wonderful event as well. And thank you for being part of the morning show today. Best wishes to you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Greg.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg.
And what a happy day it is for me to be reconnecting with Laura Kepler. And of course, many of you know that name very, very well, as Laura Kepler, originally from Kenosha, proud Carthage graduate and Miss America 2012. And Laura Kepler has extended a very generous hand to the city of Kenosha and to her alma mater by creating the Laura Kepler Scholarship Fund. And we're going to be talking with her about what prompted her to do this. We'll look back at her time at Carthage College and why she felt like she wanted to do this. That is to create 8 full tuition scholarships that will be available to future Carthage students. Laura Kepler, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm just so happy to be hearing your voice again and also to have such a happy topic to be talking about.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the scholarship, let's kind of turn the clock back to when you were looking at colleges and what prompted you ultimately to select Carthage. You are from the class of 2010, so I assume we're talking about the years of 2005 or 2006 that you're first looking at colleges. What were you looking mm-hmm. for, and what did you think Carthage would have to offer you?
Well, I was looking for a great music program, first and foremost. I had grew up with music and was a vocalist and knew that I wanted to pursue my higher education in music. So a stellar music department was what I was looking for, number one. Number two, I went to a really small high school. I went to St. Joe's, now St. Joseph Catholic Academy. When I went there, it was called St. Joe's, in Kenosha. So I really enjoyed a small community where everyone knew one another. You knew your teachers very well. And the school community, everyone knew each other's names. And so I was looking for that environment in a college as well. I'm also from Kenosha, so I enjoyed the idea of being home and being able to be close to my family, who I'm very close to. And so for me, Carthage checked all of those boxes and ultimately became such a great decision, because I look back at my time there and have such wonderful memories of, you know, meeting my college dorm, my first dorm roommates, who are still my best friends to this day. And we've been in each other's weddings and through the good and the bad of life. And then I think about my music education and how that has helped me to go on in professional settings to really be, able to hold my own among other very impressive musicians. And so I look back at my time at Carthage with nothing but fond memories and so grateful for the experience.
I'm just curious, you came from Kenosha and you could have made the decision, as some Kenoshans or Racinians do, to live at home. But you chose to go to sort of dive pell-mell into a full collegiate experience living on campus. Can you take us back to making that particular choice and what was behind that choice?
Well, I love my family, but I I didn't know that I wanted to stay with them for 4 years while I was in college. I think I just wanted, you know, a normal college experience, living on campus, living in the dorms, and I think quite a few people do that. A lot of people who go to Carthage who are from the area still live in the dorms, and that experience is really valuable. I don't know that I would be able to look back at my college experience and feel like it was the same had I not had the on-campus, living in the dorms experience. That kind of, you know, that kind of makes it.
You were a music major at Carthage, but of course, Carthage is a liberal arts school, and so you end up studying a number of other things outside of the major. I mean, that is what a liberal arts education is all about. Do you have one or two high points that you look back on in terms of what you studied at Carthage outside of the specific music major that you were pursuing?
Yeah, I do actually remember a lot of courses that I enjoyed outside of music, and you know, Greg, that music is so all-encompassing that it's kind of sporadic how you have your general education courses mixed in with all of your music courses. But I do, I remember my sociology course, Sociology 101 with Ellen Hauser. And I loved that class. And actually, I loved it so much that I even thought about possibly minoring in sociology. And I didn't, but I really enjoyed that class. I loved my professor. And that's part of the Carthage experience as well, is that, you know, even though you're in a certain department, you're not, you have interactions that are meaningful outside of that department. You know, music was not my only, even though it was my focus, but, you know, you have those other strong interactions that I don't know that you find in other campus settings.
Right. There are certainly places you can go and major in something, but that becomes really your sole focus. And a place like Carthage is a place where you will experience a lot of other things.
Right.
I certainly want you to say a word about some of the most powerful experiences you had within your music major. And you don't have to go on and on about singing Pamina in the Magic Flute in Opera Workshop, although that's, of course, a very pleasant memory for me and for everybody who was part of that. But aside from that, what would be some of the high points of in terms of experiences you had as a music major at Carthage and maybe people who played an important role in some of those experiences for you?
Well, first and foremost, the music department faculty, you know, played the biggest role. And I know I speak for many of my friends who I'm still in close communication with that, you know, we all look back at our time in the music department so fondly because of our professors, because of you and Dr. Danae and Amy and Corrine and Woody, you know, and the list goes on and on, because that is really where the heart and soul of the music department is, starts there. And so I look back at all of our time with you in rehearsals and choir rehearsals just so fondly, and we had so much fun. But next to that, I would definitely say the Christmas festivals are another experience in the music department that I look back at so fondly. They are so professionally done and so beautifully orchestrated and put together, and that was always a high point as a music student myself. But beyond that, also the experience to have our recitals and to have all of the different travel experiences abroad that the music department has offered really helped shape all of us. You know, I say all of us in my class, my friends that I'm still close to, into really great overall musicians. And I don't know that I really understood that until I moved out, you know, until after I graduated and was in the real world, how the Carthage music education really creates a strong overall musician with great musicianship skills. And working with other musicians in Los Angeles and in other parts of the country that maybe didn't have a music education background don't always have that same understanding of musicianship skills. And I think that's a really impressive component to the music department.
Nicely said. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Laura Kepler, who is a 2010 graduate of Carthage College, and of course, 2012 was crowned Miss America. We need to talk about the scholarship that you have established in your name. But first, I would certainly be remiss if I didn't take a moment here to just have you reflect on that extraordinary adventure you had being Miss America. And when you look back at it now, it's not quite 10 years ago, but nearly 10 years ago. I wonder how you view that whole adventure and experience now with 2020 hindsight. What did that mean to you? What did that experience mean to you?
I do look back at it through a different lens now that I'm approaching 10 years, which I hadn't really thought of until you said that. I kind of thought, wow, 10 years, that's kind of crazy that time has flown by. But it was an amazing experience. And I was able to travel and meet so many different people that were doing incredible things. I really look back and feel proud of the work that I was able to do with my platform to advocate for at-risk youth and all of the nonprofits that I was able to work with through my platform. And then I look back at all the other experiences that I would have never had in life, all of the public speaking, all of the even just, you know, meeting and greeting people and composing yourself to be in front of a crowd, which also stems back to my Carthage music experience, performing so much and being on stage, you know, that really lended itself well to the Miss America experience. Miss America's approaching its 100th anniversary this year, and so I hope that the tradition continues. As an older woman now, I do look back at it with a different, through a different lens. Sometimes I wonder if the woman I am today would be brave enough to do some of the things that I did back then. I think when you're, you know, I was very young and maybe a little naive, but it worked out, and it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I certainly wouldn't be who I am today had I not experienced it. And I wish it all the best. You know, I really hope that the program is able to continue and carry on the amazing tradition that it's been able to sustain for almost 100 years now.
It really is pretty incredible, and it's wonderful to have you be part of that great story. So let's talk about this series of full tuition scholarships, 8 of them, that will be available to freshmen entering Carthage College. Did anything in the moment serve as a catalyst for you to want to do this?
Well, I do just want to clarify, Greg, that the 8 scholarships are the Carthage Kenosha scholarships. And Carthage created a scholarship in my name after I became Miss America, which was the Laura Kepler Kenosha Scholarship. And that's one of the 8 full tuition scholarships under the Kenosha Scholarships umbrella. And so what I wanted to do after after Kenosha had such a difficult year this last year, not only with the pandemic, but also with all of the social unrest and rioting, I really felt compelled to give back to a community that has given so much to me and has supported me for so long. And one of the ways was to create an additional scholarship at Carthage called the Laura M. Kepler Scholarship, which is an endowment that will help the Laura Kepler Kenosha Carthage Scholarship live on in perpetuity.
Ah.
And so the technicalities are a little tricky. And now, you know, now there's two of the same name scholarships, but that's the difference, is that Carthage did create one and named it after me, but Carthage funds that. And then I've created a separate one that is an endowment that the school will use to enhance the Laura Kepler Scholarship and have the recipients use as they see fit.
Fantastic. And I thank you for clarifying that.
I just wanted to clarify. I wish I could do eight full tuition scholarships.
Right, right.
Carthage is only getting more expensive,
yes.
I believe.
Right, right. No, and I'm glad you. It is spelled out in the news release, but I kind of misread things and combined
That's
things
okay.
in a way I
yes.
shouldn't have. So thank you for offering the clarification. So let me ask again, did anything in particular serve as a catalyst for you to want to extend your generosity in this way?
I have been thinking about it for quite some time. And, you know, I think this last year we've all just been trying to get through the pandemic, and we've all just kind of been, you know, gripping our, you know, just kind of holding on for dear life to just try and get things through. I have two little kids, and so I was just really focused on my family for this last year. But now, as you know, the dust is sort of settling and we're seeing normal life carry on a little bit, and things go back to normal, there wasn't really a particular catalyst per se, more so the notion of wanting to give back for quite some time and just feeling like this was the time to do it now that the dust has settled. You know, you're not seeing social unrest in Kenosha anymore. It just felt like a nice time and something that I've wanted to do for quite some time.
Very good. And I know that at carthage.edu there is all kinds of information available on what is involved in applying for any of these scholarships. And this is a scholarship that we're talking about for the following school year. And we hope that people will seek out information and investigate this really exciting possibility. I should think that when it comes to something like legacy and leaving something behind, this has to make you feel really good that that your legacy can include this.
It does. It does. And that's a funny notion, you know, your legacy and what you want to leave behind. And it does. It feels really nice to give back, and especially to a place, like I said, that has been so supportive and encouraging of me. And it's so nice to talk to you, Greg, because I, you know, think back of my time at Carthage and you pop in my mind right away, and Dr. Dene and so many other professors that, you know, I still talk to pretty frequently. And it does. It feels really wonderful. Mm. So thank you for talking with me about it.
Laura Kepler, 2010 graduate of Carthage College, and of course also Miss America for 2012. Laura Kepler, great to hear your voice again. Very best wishes to you and yours, and thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg. Great to talk to you.
To finish out today's morning show and to celebrate Father's Day a couple of days late, here is my 2006 conversation with the late Tim Russert, longtime host of NBC's Meet the Press, and a devoted father. After he wrote a memoir about his own father called Big Russ and Me, Tim Russert received more than 60,000 letters and emails from people talking about their own fathers. He gathered some memorable excerpts together into a wonderful book called Wisdom of Our Fathers.
One of the things, Mr. Russert, that I find especially striking about your book is that after these various accounts which came to you from ordinary people, often we'll see a name, a comma, and then a simple single word. And often that single word is pharmacist or machinist. I mean, this is a book which gathers together stories from people who are not famous, ordinary working people who otherwise would never find their stories in a book. I wonder how much you thought about that as you put this together.
Well, it reflects reality. After I wrote Big Russ and Me, about my dad who quit school in the 10th grade and the fight in World War II, he was terribly injured when his B-24 Liberator went down. He spent 6 months in a military hospital and then came back and started a second mission with my mom to raise and educate his four kids. And he did it by working two full-time jobs as a garbage man and a truck driver. He didn't ask for anything and gave everything. And as I went around the country, and in the following months, I received 60,000 letters and emails from sons and daughters who perceived the book as an invitation to talk about their dad. And they were from all walks of life. And they wanted to say that it was not an expensive vacation or a material gift that they remember most about their dad. It was the small moment, the tender touch, those small moments that made the big difference. And they are regular guys. These are not superheroes. They're people who get up every morning and do their best. And I read the letters, and it was a very emotional experience for me. I read them all myself. It took me a year and a half. But I wanted to put them together in a book which a son and daughter could give their dad. And say, hey, Dad, read about these other dads. They're a lot like you. Mm. Thank you. Thank you.
One thing that's interesting is for as ordinary as these fathers are, by and large, though they do great things in the way that they ended up being fathers and parenting, in many cases, the children who write about their fathers are really doing an exceptionally fine job of it. Did you edit these stories very much, or did they come to you so beautifully eloquent?
They were crafted by the children, by the sons and daughters. You know, I would make some suggestions or small edits, but nothing significant. I was overwhelmed by the quality. And I say this as a man and with three sisters. The letters from the daughters were so powerful, so emotional. I find I and a lot of my buddies, we kind of back into these kind of discussions, you know, let me tell you about my dad, and not the daughters. They are front and center. I am daddy's girl. The only daddy could call me by this pet name. My daddy treated me like a princess. And you just read this and marvel at it, how this bond between a father and a daughter is so very special.
I want you to tell our listeners the story you mentioned in the introduction of a certain doctor who I believe comes to one of your book signings for that first book you wrote about you and your own father. What a powerful moment that was for you.
Dr. Alfred Tanz. And I was sitting at the table signing books, and as is the custom when there's a line, they take a little sticky post-it and put it on the book so you're signing looking down, and it said Alfred Tanz, and I started citing the book to Alfred Tanz, best always, Tim Russert. And I said, Alfred Tanz, that sounds... And I looked up, and there was this little man. It was Dr. Tanz, and he said to me, do you remember me? I'm the man who brought your son Luke into the world. And he had delivered our son. He seemed so much smaller out of his scrubs. When he was in his scrubs holding my baby boy, he was the biggest man in the history of my life. But he was also the first man to call me dad. He said, congratulations, Dad, you have a baby boy. And I just got up and I hugged him and hugged him and hugged him. It was so emotional to me. I had not seen him since the birth of my son some 20 years ago. And it was in terms of coming full circle, the man who brought my son to the world now standing before me as I signed a book about fathers and sons and daughters.
We're speaking with Tim Russert about his new book called Wisdom of Our Fathers, Lessons and Letters from Daughters and Sons. We think of one of the abiding themes in your book, and that is of the man who does not easily express emotion or perhaps affection. As you've talked now with so many children from across the country over the course of several different generations, do you find that that is changing to a great extent, or do you think most fathers still have some trouble with that compared to the typical mother, for instance?
I think it's changed dramatically. I mean, moms are our nurturers. They're the ones who comfort us, you know, touch our head for fevers and treat us our earaches. And certainly that was the case with my own mom. She actually used to put warm tea bags on my eyes to ease the pain. We lived near a steel plant. And my eyes used to get irritated frequently. I know it in my own life. My dad never said, "I love you," until after I wrote the book. But I knew he did. I could tell by his hard work and his sacrifice. I'm much different with my own son. I say to him every day, "Luke, I love you. You're always, always loved, but you're never, never entitled." I also add that because I want him to accept the same lessons that my dad taught me about hard work and accountability and respect and civility.
Hmm. You have a whole
more and more daughters and sons say that they are different than their dads in that they are very expressive with words. The important thing, however, I think is it's also got to be matched with actions. I received a letter the other day saying, you know, the theme of your book is that it's better to see a sermon than it is to hear one.
Hmm.
And I think that's why the lessons our dad taught us are so powerful, because we saw them.
Hmm.
We saw the quiet eloquence of their act, and that makes a real impression.
You do acknowledge in the introduction that out of these 60,000 emails and letters that you received, there were a few that expressed something else, and that, of course, is that not all fathers are good fathers. And there are even a few fathers out there that are terrible fathers. Where do you think the lesson is in that? How do we acknowledge that truth as at the same time that we celebrate the good fathers among us?
Well, we have to. And it was not a large percentage of the letters, but I did receive some. And I wanted to be open about that because there are some monsters out there, as one daughter described her dad. They're dads who drink too much and gamble or run away from their families and don't fulfill their responsibilities. And we have to deal with it. There's also many sons and daughters wrote me about tensions or strain or estrangement from their dads. There's a whole chapter on forgiveness and reconciliation, how fathers and sons and daughters didn't speak for 5, 7, 10, 12, 15 years. And these sons and daughters talk about how they were able to put back together their relationship and how much more meaningful it is. It can be difficult. It can be challenging. But it's something worth undertaking.
Hmm.
One painful letter on this subject was from Lou Christine, who tried so hard to have a relationship with his dad, who had the same name. He would see him in a drugstore, and his dad would ignore him. His dad drove a taxi. He would look all over town looking for his dad's taxi and wave at it, honk the horn. His father would never acknowledge him. They were in a courtroom together one time, and the judge said, "Lou Christine," and both said, "Here," simultaneously. In the end, Lou did this. He concluded his letters by saying, I just have to say one thing, that my dad missed out on knowing a pretty good son.
Hmm.
So he wouldn't be worn down by that. But by and large, overwhelmingly, the vast, vast majority of these sons and daughters say that they had quite a guide for their dad and are forever, forever grateful.
Well, and even those that are difficult situations sometimes talk about it humorously. I love Peter DeMattia's line.
God loves you, and I'm trying.
Right. Sometimes that's the way Father looks as well. The book, again, Wisdom of Our Fathers, Lessons and Letters from Daughters and Sons, published by Random House. Tim Russert, this is a wonderful book, and I thank you for putting it together and for talking about it today on our morning show. Best wishes to you.
And happy Father's Day to everyone. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow on the morning show, the editor of Root Magazine talks about travel in America these days, and in particular, all of the wonderful things that can be found along America's most iconic highway, Route 66.